Chapter 16. Whatever the letters are, they've a good meaning, and it's a stamp that has been in our house, Ben says, ever since he was a little un, and his mother used to put it on the cakes, and I've always put it on too, for if there's any good, we've need of it I this world. It's one. H. S. said Silas, at which proof of learning Aaron peeped round the chair again. Well, to be sure, you can read 'em off, said Dolly. And read 'em to me many and many a time, but they slip out o' my mind again. The more's the pity, for they're good letters, else they wouldn't be in the church. And so I prick 'em on all the loaves and all the cakes, though sometimes they won't hold, because o' the rising for, as I said, if there's any good, to be got we've need of it I this world that we have. And I hope they'll bring good to you, Master Marner, for it's why, that will I brought you the cakes, and you see the letters have held better nor common. Silas was as unable to interpret the letters as Dolly, but there was no possibility of misunderstanding the desire to give comfort that made itself heard in her quiet tones. He said, with more feeling than before, thank you kindly. But he laid down the cakes, and seated himself absently, drearily unconscious of any distinct benefit towards which the cakes and the letters, or even Dolly's kindness, could tend for him. Ah, if there's good anywhere, we've need of it, repeated Dolly, who did not lightly forsake a serviceable phrase. She looked at Silas pityingly as she went on. But you didn't hear the church bells this morning, Master Marner? I doubt you didn't know it was Sunday. Living so lone here, you lose your count, I dare say. And then, when your loom makes a noise, you can't hear the bells, more particular now the frost kills the sound. Yes, I did. I heard 'em, said Silas, to whom Sunday bells were a mere accident of the day, and not part of its sacredness. There had been no bells in Lantern Yard. Dear heart, said Dolly, pausing before she spoke again. But what a pity it is you should work of a Sunday, and not clean yourself, if you didn't go to church. For if you'd a roasting bit, it might be as you couldn't leave it, being a lone man. But there's the back of us, if you could make up your mind, to spend a twopence on the oven now and then, not every week, in course I shouldn't like to do that myself, you might carry your bit o' dinner there, for it's nothing but right to have a bit o' some at odd of a Sunday, and not to make it as you can't know your dinner from Saturday. But now, you o' Christmas Day, this blessed Christmas as is ever coming, if you was to take your dinner to the back of us, and go to church, and see the holly and the yew, and hear the anthem, and then take the sacrament, you'd be a deal the better, and you'd know which end you stood on, and you could put your trust I them as knows better nor we do, seeing you'd ha' done what it lies on us all to do. Dolly's exhortation, which was an unusually long effort of speech for her, was uttered in the soothing persuasive tone with which she would have tried to prevail on a sick man to take his medicine, or a basin of gruel for which he had no appetite. Silas had never before been closely urged on the point of his absence from church, which had only been thought of as a part of his general queerness, and he was too direct and simple to evade Dolly's appeal. Nay, he said, I know nothing o' church. I've never been to church. No, said Dolly, in a low tone of wonderment. Then bethinking herself of Silas's advent from an unknown country, she said, could it ha' been as they'd no church where you was born? Oh, yes, said Silas, meditatively, sitting in his usual posture of leaning on his knees, and supporting his head. Here was churches a many, it was a big town. But I knew nothing of 'em, I went to chapel. Dolly was much puzzled at this new word, but she was rather afraid of inquiring further, lest chapel might mean some haunt of wickedness. After a little thought, she said, well, Master Marner, it's never too late to turn over a new leaf, and if you've never had no church, there's no telling the good it'll do you. For I feel so set up and comfortable as never was, when I've been, and heard the prayers, and the singing to the praise and glory o' God, as Mr. Macy gives out and Mr. Crickenthorpe saying good words, and more particular on Sacrament Day, And if a bit o' trouble comes, I feel as I can put up wi' it, for I've looked for help by the right quarter, and gev myself up to them as we must all give ourselves up to at the last. And if when done our part, it isn't to be believed as them as are above us all be worse nor we are, and come short o' thern. Poor Dolly's exposition of her simple Raveloe theology fell rather unmeaningly on Silas's ears, for there was no word in it that could rouse a memory of what he had known as religion, and his comprehension was quite baffled by the plural pronoun, which was no heresy of Dolly's, but only her way of avoiding a presumptuous familiarity. He remained silent, not feeling inclined to assent to the part of Dolly's speech which he fully understood her recommendation, that he should go to church. Indeed, Silas was so unaccustomed to talk beyond the brief questions and answers necessary for the transaction of his simple business, that words did not easily come to him without the urgency of a distinct purpose. But now, little Aaron, having become used to the weaver's awful presence, had advanced to his mother's side, and Silas, seeming to notice him for the first time, tried to return Dolly's signs of goodwill by offering the lad a bit of lard cake. Aaron shrank back a little, and rubbed his head against his mother's shoulder, but still thought the piece of cake worth the risk of putting his hand out for it. "Oh, for shame, Aaron," said his mother, taking him on her lap, however. "Why, you don't want cake again yet a while. He's wonderful hearty," she went on, with a little sigh, "had he is, God knows. He's my youngest, and we spoil him sadly, for either me, or the father must delays have him in our sight that we must." She stroked Aaron's brown head, and thought it must do Master Marner good to see such a ictor of a child. But Marner, on the other side of the hearth, saw the neat-featured rosy face as a mere dim round, with two dark spots in it. "And he's got a voice like a bird you wouldn't think," Dolly went on. "He can sing a Christmas carol as his father's taught him, and I take it for a token as he'll come to good, as he can learn the good tune so quick. Come, Aaron, stand up and sing the carol to Master Marner, come." Aaron replied by rubbing his forehead against his mother's shoulder. "Oh, that's naughty," said Dolly, gently. "Stand up, when mother tells you, and let me hold the cake till you've done." Aaron was not indisposed to display his talents, even to an ogre, under protecting circumstances, and after a few more signs of coyness, consisting chiefly in rubbing the backs of his hands over his eyes, and then peeping between them at Master Marner, to see if he looked anxious for the arrow, he at length allowed his head to be duly adjusted, and standing behind the table, which let him appear above it only as far as his broad frill, so that he looked like a cherubic head untroubled with a body, he began with a clear chirp, and in a melody that at the rhythm of an industrious hammer, "God rest you, merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay, for Jesus Christ our Savior was born on Christmas Day." Dolly listened with a devout look, glancing at Marner in some confidence that this strain would help to allure him to church. "That's Christmas music," she said, when Aaron had ended and had secured his piece of cake again. "Here's no other music equal to the Christmas music arc the Errol angels sing. And you may judge what it is at church, Master Marner, with the bassoon and the voices, as you can't help thinking you've got to a better place arity, for I wouldn't speak ill o' this world, seeing as them put us in it as knows best, but what why the drink, and the quarreling, and the bad illnesses, and the hard dying, as I've seen times and times, one's thankful to hear of a better. The boy sings pretty, don't he, Master Marner?" "Yes," said Silas, absently, "very pretty." The Christmas carol, with its hammer-like rhythm, had fallen on his ears as strange music, quite unlike a hymn, and could have none of the effect Dolly contemplated. But he wanted to show her that he was grateful, and the only mode that occurred to him was to offer Aaron a bit more cake. "Oh, no, thank you, Master Marner," said Dolly, holding down Aaron's willing hands. "He must be going home now. And so I wish you goodbye, Master Marner, And if you ever feel anyways bad in your inside, as you can't fend for yourself, I'll come and clean up for you, and get you a bit of vittle and willing. But I beg and pray of you to leave off weaving of a Sunday, for it's bad for soul and body, and the money as comes I that way I'll be a bad bed to lie down on at the last, if it doesn't fly away, nobody knows where, like the white frost. And you'll excuse me being that free with you, Master Marner, for I wish you well I do. Make your bow, Aaron. Silas said goodbye, and thank you kindly, as he opened the door for Dolly, but he couldn't help feeling relieved, when she was gone relieved, that he might weave again, and moan at his ease. Her simple view of life and its comforts, by which as he had tried to cheer him, was only like a report of unknown objects, which his imagination could not fashion. The fountains of human love, and of faith in a divine love had not yet been unlocked, and his soul was still a shrunken rivulet, with only this difference, that its little groove of S, and was blocked up, and it wandered confusedly against dark obstruction. And so, notwithstanding the honest persuasions of Mr. Macy and Dolly Winthrop, Silas spent his Christmas day in loneliness, eating his meat in sadness of heart, though the meat had come to him as a neighborly present. In the morning he looked out on the black frost that seemed to press cruelly on every blade of grass, while the half-icy red pool shivered under the bitter wind. But towards evening the snow began to fall, and curtained from him, even that dreary outlook, shutting him close up with his narrow grief. And he sat in his robbed home through the livelong evening, not caring to close his shutters or lock his door, pressing his head between his hands and moaning, till the cold grasped him, and told him that his fire was gray. Nobody in this world but himself knew that he was the same Silas Marner who had once loved his fellow with tender love, and trusted in an unseen goodness. Even to himself that past experience had become dim. But in Raveloe village the bells rang merrily, and the church was fuller than all through the rest of the year, with red faces among the abundant dark green boughs, faces prepared for a longer service than usual by an odorous breakfast of toast and ale. Those green boughs, the hymn and anthem never heard, but at Christmas even the Athanasian Creed, which was discriminated from the others only as being longer, and of exceptional virtue, since it was only read on rare occasions, brought a vague exulting sense, for which the grown men could as little have found words as the children, that something great and mysterious had been done for them in heaven above and in earth below, which they were appropriating by their presence. And then the red faces made their way through the black biting frost to their own homes, feeling themselves free for the rest of the day to eat, drink, and be merry, and using that Christian freedom without diffidence. At Squire Cass's family party that day nobody mentioned Dunstan, nobody was sorry for his absence, or feared it would be too long. The doctor and his wife, Uncle and Aunt Kimball were there, and the annual Christmas talk was carried through without any omissions, rising to the climax of Mr. Kimball's experience, when he walked the London hospitals 30 years back, together with striking professional anecdotes then gathered. Whereupon cards followed, with Aunt Kimball's annual failure to follow suit, and Uncle Kimball's irascibility concerning the odd trick which was rarely explicable to him, when it was not on his side, without a general visitation of tricks to see that they were formed on sound principles. The whole being accompanied by a strong steaming odor of spirits and water. But the party on Christmas Day, being a strictly family party, was not the preeminently brilliant celebration of the season at the Red House. It was the great dance on New Year's Eve that made the glory of Squire Cass's hospitality, as of his forefathers, time out of mind. This was the occasion when all the society of Raveloe and Tarley, whether old acquaintances separated by long ruddy distances, or cooled acquaintances separated by misunderstandings concerning runaway calves, or acquaintances founded on intermittent condescension, counted on meeting and on comporting themselves with mutual appropriateness. This was the occasion on which fair dames who came on pillion sent their bandboxes before them, supplied with more than their evening costume. For the feast was not to end with a single evening, like a poultry town entertainment, where the whole supply of eatables is put on the table at once, and bedding is scanty. The Red House was provisioned, as if for a siege, and as for the spare feather beds ready to be laid on floors, they were as plentiful as might naturally be expected in a family that had killed its own geese for many generations. Godfrey Cass was looking forward to this New Year's Eve with a foolish, reckless longing that made him half deaf to his importunate companion, anxiety. Duncy will be coming home soon. There will be a great blow-up, and how will you bribe his spite to silence? Said anxiety. Oh, he won't come home before New Year's Eve, perhaps, said Godfrey. And I shall sit by Nancy then, and dance with her, and get a kind look from her in spite of herself. But money is wanted in another quarter, said Anxiety, in a louder voice, and how will you get it without selling your mother's diamond pin? And if you don't get it? Well, but something may happen to make things easier. At any rate, there's one pleasure for me close at hand. Nancy is coming. Yes, and suppose your father should bring matters to a pass that will oblige you to decline marrying her, and to give your reasons? Hold your tongue, and don't worry me. I can see Nancy's eyes, just as they will look at me, and feel her hand in mine already. But anxiety went on, though in noisy Christmas company, refusing to be utterly quieted even by much drinking. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.